C'est quoi?
Kicks on the metal. Hopped out my whip with some banjo. I'm with your girl, Gucci sandals. Ain't that my squad can't handle. Yeah, I'm the man, Welcome back to episode 6 of season 1. We decided to change up our intro a little bit this week to I'm the Man by G Cinco, also known as Nick Gordon. What do you think about that, Brando?
I love that. I mean, maybe Nick Gordon's career really should just be being traded to a LA market so he can record in San Diego. That's all I think about that.
Got away from our jock jams a little bit from last week. One issue I have with that video, though, that's I'm the Man by G Cinco, if you want to look that up on YouTube. One issue I do have with that is there's a few guys in that video wearing Phillies jerseys. Is he from Philly?
No, he's not from Philly. He's not from Philly at all. Their whole family's from Florida and California. So I don't know, but Nick Gordon, I don't know. Let's not waste too much time on Nick Gordon today.
Let's talk about, there's a move that was made yesterday or 2 days ago with Craig Kimbrell.
Two days ago, because yesterday must have been Keuchel.
Craig Kimbrell signs with the Cubs, and later that night the Twins blow, were we up 7-3? Was that the score?
Something like that.
We were up 7-3 and ended up losing 9-7.
9-7, yeah. I missed part of that game. That's probably one of the only games I've missed. So maybe you could talk more about that, but weren't we up twice in that game?
Like, we were up by 4 runs and then 3 runs for multiple innings. And then there was the rain delay.
Was it Perez that was pitching that game?
Perez pitched that day.
And how far did he go approximately that game?
I think he went 4 2/3, so giving up 5 earned.
Oof. Yeah.
And then he came back. He might have went 5 2/3 and went after the rain delay for a pitch or two. Then they pulled him and they brought in Blake Parker.
All right, put me on the hot spot, Brent, about Kimbrell. If I'm the GM of the Minnesota Twins, okay, making these decisions, and now it's your turn as the press to kind of question me on what happened. Okay, go ahead. And I'm going to try to answer from his point of view and what the Twins are doing in the outlook as best as possible.
If I were a reporter going to sit and listen to Thad Levine try to defend why they didn't sign Craig Kimbrell, my number one question would be, what did we offer him? And why didn't we do more to get him? Because the Cubs only offered him 3 for $45. And that's a bargain of a price to get the best closer in the history of the game.
Yep.
Stats-wise.
So they got him for 3 for $43, and they have that option on the fourth year.
The 3+1.
Yep. And
Is it the Cubs option or is it Kimbrell's option?
Let's talk about, again, I'm from Levine, so not sure about that one. But let's talk about from Levine's side. They reportedly, and I think it's now facts, according to Jason Stark, who came on Score North yesterday, talking about, we offered him 2 for $35, which was essentially 17 per year, which is more per year per term than what the Cubs gave him and Theo Epstein gave him. Ultimately, we didn't give up to the third year, and
I don't think it was about the money for him. I think it was about the long term.
This is what I think exactly what it is. I know everyone has we don't want, it's dangerous. This is why it's dangerous, because this offseason, you're trying to extend Rosario, Buxton, Barrios, and their arbitration ends in how long?
3 years.
3 years for Buxton. For Rosario, it's in 2. For Barrios, it's in 2. And for Sano, it's in 2. Okay? That's dangerous. So that means that second year of Kimbrell's contract, you have to pay him that third year. And I'm going to tell you this. The poll ads aren't going to be okay going $20 million over their normal payroll. In general, that unfortunately, I know that, to me, I can't understand that. Like you said, we talked about this. I can't understand how that's such a huge deal for 1 year. For I think Judd Zolga made a great point yesterday. Brent, how much does, as a fan in the Minneapolis Twin Cities area, or even around Minnesota, does it affect when you sign a guy like Craig Kimbrell, right? People start talking. People will start coming. I mean, you will have filled out stadium home games for the foreseeable future, in my opinion. Like, do we remember when we had Joe Nathan? Joe Nathan was, I mean, he's really good. But he's not Craig Kimbrell in terms of what he's done in his career. He's got 2 World Series. He has a total of 7 saves in playoff history. Well, Brent, can I ask you a question?
Yep.
Now I'm kind of going to the back of the fan. I'm trying to play fan and Falvey Levine. Like, I'm fan. I'm thinking, like, so you're turning down a guy that's career ERA is under a 2, which is historically insane. He's already in the Hall of Fame. At this point of his career, he's already ahead of the pace of Mariano Rivera's save record and Trevor Hoffman's save record. And then to go on with that, he has 7 more saves, 7 more innings than any other active Twins reliever if you take out Trevor Hildenberger and Trevor May from pitching half an inning in the Yankees game 2 years ago. 7 more saves, and he has like 45 more appearances in games than any reliever we have. Like, we can talk all day about if I'm a fan, if I'm mad about Levine, it's because you want playoff experience. Yes, we're a really good, talented team, but how many guys can we say, like, Odorizzi, has he pitched in a playoff game with the Rays? I don't think so. I'm pretty sure he hasn't. Has Jose Barrios pitched besides that one, unfortunate inning in New York? No. And then you look at the Kyle Gibson, no. Who else we got? Martin Perez. I'm going to say maybe a couple innings 4 years ago for Texas when they made the playoffs that 1 year. But nobody else, Brent. So if I'm a fan, it's kind of hard to understand why you are turning down a guy who's won World Series. And he literally, guess who pitched the last pitch of the World Series last year? Craig Kimbrell. So those things to me matter. I understand his ERA was inflated last year in the playoffs, but that would make me upset. Now let's go really quick to Levine and Falvey.
Do you have a question for me?
What?
Do you have a question for me?
Yes. So, you know, if I'm the reporter now, and I'm asking you a question, okay? And I'm asking you, what is the cost of signing Craig Kimbrell for 3 years? Potentially a 4th. Beyond just the salary. That's my question to you.
You're asking me what is the downfall of signing Craig Kimbrell for three
beyond just like, who cares about how he performs right now? We have, it's just we're just guessing, but beyond just that, how does that negatively affect other things of parts of our team?
I don't think it has any negative effect, because if we're going to bring in Kimbrell, he's not only going to bring in fans, he's going to increase jersey sales, he's going to increase your sales from the fans coming to the game.
You're right.
He's going to increase just everything around you as the owner of this team,
yep.
As the Polabs. He's going to bring, yes, we're giving him 3 for 45, 3+1, whatever yep. It's going to be. I was ready to offer, we talked about this earlier, I was ready to offer him, I mean, we obviously aren't doing anything, but I thought we should have offered him 3 for 47, 3+1 for 47, 48. That would have sat comfortably, and I think that would have got it done for us. And so if you're the Polabs, you got to be sitting there thinking, the first game when we have him in uniform, the place is going to sell out, because now we have a back end of our bullpen where we saw it 2 nights ago, and we even saw it last night during Kepler's 3-home run game. Okay, we were up, what was it, 3 in the 9th? And yeah. They came back and scored 2 and put pressure on us, but Taylor Rogers closed the door. So there's no surefire arm in our bullpen that's going to come out and get 3 outs, except for 1 person right now, and that's Taylor Rogers. Trevor May's got for 1 inning. But after that, he's got to be shut down. Who else in our bullpen right now do you trust? As a fan sitting in Target Field, you're sitting there in the 9th inning, you got your nachos in front of you, and out comes who to make you feel safe besides Taylor Rogers?
You're right.
Now, and that's Craig Kimbrell.
Now, let me go back to now the Levine side, Falvey side. Collusion is a big word. I'm going to highlight the word collusion. The offseason, the last 2 seasons for free agents, that word is the most highly used word amongst GMs, amongst the winter ball meetings in December and January. Okay, that's a big word because Craig Kimbrell and Dallas Keuchel and actually a lot of others, even years beyond, Lance Lynn signed really late, hence probably why he had a tough start for the Twins last year. And a lot of those guys signed really late because of, well, the market. The market tells us is that we don't want aging bullpen guys, aging starters with lower velocity, because what the market and the analytics tells us is that those guys, if you give them $15, $20 million a year for 4 or 5 year deals into their mid-30s, are bad contracts. Case in point, like, Yu Darvish is not exactly a great contract at this point for the Cubs. If I'm Thad Levine, I'm thinking, if I sign Craig Kimbrell this year at $15 million, let's just say $15 million a year, right? Well, can you answer me a question? Because this matters, in my opinion, if I'm Thad Levine and Falvey. How does Max Kepler and Jorge Polanco feel about that one? They already signed their contracts. I understand that, right? And then how does that affect... Sorry, you have two of the best positional contracts, debatably, in the AL Central. Max Kepler at $7 million a year for the next 5 years?
AL Central, that's all of the AL.
Yes, right? And Jorge Polanco. Do you want to destroy a good thing? Because people talk. You think Jorge Polanco, who pays 150 games at shortstop this year, borderline batting champion at MVP, should be getting paid $7 million a year when your guy who pitches 60 innings and appears in 50 different games gets $15 million a year? That's double what they both make. So when you're talking about Rosario and Buxton and all these guys, even Garver, coming off arbitration in the next few years, you're going to ruin your own team market because you had to look at, well, you're going to play Kimbrel 13. Buxton's going to ask for at least 10 more million than that. So I'd be really careful of who you sign because you're already constricting in a hard environment that includes the Polads, and you don't have much money to tinker around. I mean, the most money we've ever spent in a single season for the Minnesota Twins is around $140 million. That's as high as we have ever gone in history. So it's interesting to me to think about, it now back to the fan side, how you could go either way. I am, like, as a fan, Brent, when I heard this news and you actually let me know through a text, I was so mad. I was so mad that we didn't sign Kimbrel. And then, like, probably 2 hours later, like that night even, I started softening about that because we have a lot of guys we have to pay in the next few years. And if you, this is reality speaking, if you sign Kimbrel now for 3 or 4 years, you will lose one, just one, but it matters. Either Rosario, a Buxton, a Garver, or a Barrios. And to me, I'd rather have all those guys maybe over a Kimbrel if we can find similar value without paying a big price. Now, let's go right into the real market and the real future of the Twins in the next about 30 days. So we're going to talk about the trade market. And we're talking about guys that fit us, that have been linked to us, either by Ken Rosenthal, either by MLB Network, either by Jason Stark, multiple sources in that light. So we'll start off with, we have been rumored for about 3 months now about acquiring Will Smith, a lefty from San Francisco, his career ERA around a 3, and he's a 3-time All-Star, I believe. And he's played the closer role on 2 World Series teams for the Giants, who won. So the guy's a winner. If you remember the last time the Giants won the World Series, it was Madison Bumgarner would do everything he could for about 7 or 8 innings, and then it would be Will Smith trying to finish it up. So Will Smith is, does he have high velocity? Brent, as we talked about, no, he throws about 92 to 93 miles per hour. He's got really good off-speed stuff, too. Let's move on to Ken Giles from Toronto, right-hander, throws 98, also known as 100 miles Giles. Sometimes gets up to 100, has an amazing strikeout ratio to walk ratio. I don't know if this really matters, but I kind of like it for some reason. There's a historic moment when Ken Giles came off of a big game against Detroit, or I can't remember who it was, but some team. And he let a home run in the ninth inning, and he blew the game, and he came off the mound punching himself in the side of the jaw. I kind of thought that was interesting, because Ken Giles is pretty hardcore that way, so I guess that'd play well for the fans, at least, if he did have a tough game. But Ken Giles is reliable. He's been to an All-Star game. His career ERA is a 2.7. That's, again, borderline. If he has five, six more years of a career, that's borderline Hall of Fame, what he's been doing. I would like Ken Giles as a possibility, Brent. What do you think on Ken Giles? And let's just talk about Ken Giles and Will Smith. I have a lot of them we're going to get into, okay? So Will Smith, Ken Giles, do you favor one? And what do the Twins need? What kind of, like, describe the perfect guy with miles per hour and stuff. Explain what's a perfect fit for our bullpen, what we need.
I would really like to bring in Ken Giles. We've talked about this for a while now. Not only that he's 28 years old, it's that he throws 98 to 100 miles an hour in the back end of your bullpen, coming in to close the door in the ninth inning. I think it's something that we really don't have in our bullpen right now, and it's something that I think every good bullpen has, because you look at the Yankees, who's in the back end of their bullpen? Aroldis Chapman throwing 102 miles an hour. You look at all these teams where when you get to the ninth and they bring in their closer that's throwing gas, if you're in the bottom of your lineup or if you're in a spot where you need two or three runs, it's going to be hard to get that. Going as fast, he's coming to the fastball 95% of the time. Catch up to it. Good luck. And I think that with him being 28, and if we can get him signed at a good deal for long term, that's going to benefit us going long term, because now we can have Ken Giles in the ninth, you got Taylor Rogers in the eighth, and we can go Trevor May in the seventh, and we can get our starters to go six. Like we said before, that's like the Royals how many years ago when they had the back end of their bullpen. If they could just get it to the seventh inning with a lead, it was lights up.
Yeah, Wade Davis, Holland, and...
And with our lineup, we've seen how many times that we score six runs a game. 4 to 3 to 6 runs a game.
Yeah.
If we can just get that and have Berrios go six, or we can have Odo go six, or Martin Perez get to the sixth inning, man, just get there, and now we can have 7, 8, 9 with these three guys going.
I agree with you on the part of everything you said, and I'm going to add on one thing. For Ken Giles, simply a right-handed arm in the bullpen. Do we have a dominant righty besides... And I'm sorry, he's not dominant. I know you like your Trevor May, but he's good.
Go check him out on Twitch.
He is actually really solid for a reliever, but is he your dominant righty? The answer is no. Your dominant lefty is Taylor Rogers, and why do I pick Ken Giles over Will Smith in this scenario, Brent, if I have to pick? Because you already have your best bullpen guy as a lefty, and if you want to play matchups in a playoff game because you're going to do late subs, that matters. So Ken Giles, I think, is the right pick, but you can't go wrong with Will Smith because he's won two World Series, and he's pitched in all of them, and a lot. So then you go, let's move on to Zach Wheeler.
Okay, this is
your guy. Like, this,
I've been on him for like 2 months now.
This guy... we all know they have Steven Matz in that. They have a heck of a rotation. Apparently, they just can't figure out how to win. But and that Cano trade's not looking good for the Mets. But Zach Wheeler is just a part of an amazing rotation that just can't find its way for some reason, with Noah Syndergaard and Jacob deGrom and Steven Matz and himself. They all throw really good speed. So if you want to talk about, like, oh, is Zach Wheeler just good because he throws high velocity, I actually will disagree with that. Because not only do the Mets have four really good pitchers, they have three of those guys all throw the same speed as Zach Wheeler. And I think that's a disadvantage if you're a starter like Zach Wheeler in that rotation, because guys are seeing similar stuff at similar velocities, and you would think that Zach Wheeler's stuff isn't as his stuff, like his curveball and his movement, his run on all the pitches, you'd think it's not as good as DeGrom or Syndergaard. But you can make an argument. If someone just tweaks with the young Zach Wheeler, still not even 30 yet, 30 years old yet, I think he's 28, right? Zach Wheeler's 28?
I believe so.
Yeah, he's 28, because we were playing the show last night, and it showed at 28. But I think there's room for improvement with Zach Wheeler. Give Wes Johnson, that's fascinating to me. That's when you said that, Brent, like it took a couple weeks to click. Like, oh my God. I feel like Zach Wheeler, if you watch his tape, he's not a complete product. He's one of those guys that he's kind of a late bloomer at every single step of where he's been, and he's really intriguing. You could make Zach, I feel like if the Astros traded for Zach Wheeler, he would become like a Gerrit Cole. Like, because Gerrit Cole, if you look at where he came from in the Pittsburgh, he started off hot, and he turned into a disaster. They got rid of him, and the Astros found new life in his curveball. So, Zach Wheeler's an interesting thing. If you're getting him for a fifth starter in the rotation, oh my God. Can you imagine, Brent, of Berríos, Jake Odorizzi, probably Kyle Gibson, Martin Perez, or whatever, Zach Wheeler, then Perez. That's a ridiculous five. And if anything, you can put one of those guys in the bullpen for two or three innings in a playoff game. So I love Zach Wheeler. Let's just move really quick through this. Mark Melancon's a little option from San Francisco. He's won a championship for the Giants. He's another little reliever that we can look at. He has a career good pretty good ERA as well. Edwin Diaz has been a failed project, or not project, but a trade that for the Mets that has not worked out very well. He's got a kind of heavy contract. I don't see the Twins doing that just because they don't want to take in that much money. I'm going to talk about my mystery man because you've had two on this list. You've had Ken Giles and Zach Wheeler on your... I mean, you've called these, you know, about a month ago, if not longer ago, Brent. But my mystery man is a guy from the Cincinnati Reds. He's got controllability. Who has talked about the controllability? LaVine has, and Falvey. This guy has controllability for 2 or 3 years, I believe. He's got a reasonable contract for $8 million. Okay? Basically almost half as what Kimbrel almost can be. Raziel Iglesias from the Cincinnati Reds. He's been a two-time All-Star. His ERA, look at his stat. I've never seen a more consistent stat guy except for Kimbrel. Like, literally, like Raziel Iglesias, 2.8, 2.5, 2.5, 2.5. Every year is good. His strikeouts are out of this world per nine. And his walks are a little high, but his stuff, his velocity is unbelievable. There's your Aroldis Chapman at half the price and controlled. And what does it take to get Raziel Iglesias? I'm not sure. But it's going to probably be a hefty price, but I would do it. It's either him or Ken Giles. Both righties, I would do for either of those. And we're going to move on from the baseball side and start talking about some other stuff. I want to name two more guys really quick. Kirby Yates is a guy to think about from San Diego. He's done well. And Michael Givens is another guy to think about from the Orioles. He's had some high ERA this year, like above 5. But his stuff and his FIP, his FIP, fielder index percentage, plays a lot better than his actual ERA. So those are some guys to think about. Just to summarize that, Ken Giles, Zach Wheeler, and Raziel Iglesias and Will Smith. I think of the four targets that you'll see one of those guys in a Twins uniform, I think, by July 31st.
All right, let's move on to... I want to kind of change this up here. Let's go to my little T-Wolf segment here.
Oh, God.
And then I won't try and spend a lot of time on that, but we have just hired a few new guys onto our coaching staff, and I want to talk about two potential draft prospects, and I want to talk about the little D-Lo news that kind of came out about him, or us having interest in him. And then we can move on to close out the segment or this pod with your wild takes. So, the news early this week was we brought in David Vanderpool to be our new head assistant coach. He's our lead assistant coach under Ryan. He's going to be our defensive coordinator. And he was the one that kind of helped develop C.J. McCollum and Dame Dalla. I think he can go a long way for
Also Wiggins. A good rapper, by the way.
Dame Dalla is a good rapper. It says a lot about him as a coach, too, when the minute we officially signed him, and it was all over Twitter, it was all over ESPN, and all these little notes about him. There was a lot put on Twitter and Instagram by Damian Lillard about these two and pictures together, and all of these captions were Damian Lillard saying, "I never wanted to see this day come. I never wanted you to leave Portland," this and that. I think it says a lot about Vanderpool as not only a coach, but as a human being, about all these players respect him so much that he's more than a coach to them, and they wanted him to stay and be a part of their team and their lives for years to come.
So this guy's a developmental coach?
He wasn't a player development coach. He was an assistant coach there in Portland. But he worked a lot of one-on-one with CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard. So maybe he can be the one to unlock Wiggins.
I wonder, like, I'm just going to tap for 2 seconds and let you get back. I wonder, is that, when, because we probably don't know the answer, but if we could do some digging next week, I'd just love to find out, like, what, I know the development, but what did he work on with McCollum and Lillard? And then, like, to branch off that, didn't Ryan Saunders work in Washington with John Wall, and he developed him a little bit too, and John Wall said good things? I wonder, like, what kind of guys we have believe in what kind of things in terms of what's the most important thing to get a guy like Wiggins from here to here. Because I hope it's ball handling.
And we also just hired a guy today that I'll talk about in a minute that worked in Brooklyn as a player development coach strictly with D'Angelo Russell. We hired him today as an assistant coach. But I'll get to him in a minute. I also think that it says a lot about I also think it says a lot about our front office now that we just brought in Vanderpool to be our head assistant. Three weeks after he got turned down for our head coaching spot. He interviewed for our head coaching spot, and he interviewed other places.
I'm just going to say really quick, I called on a lot of platforms, social media-wise, CJ McCollum is a really good target for the Timberwolves.
I don't think we're going to get CJ.
Not necessarily saying that. I'm saying if this is what people are saying, it's not a done deal where Durant's going. People think Kyrie's somewhere in New York, New Jersey. But there's a lot of belief because the NBA national media and the fans got a huge picture of what Damian Lillard really could be this year. Hardcore fans know how good Lillard's always been, right? But what was the difference this year for the Blazers? They got past the first round. Finally! They didn't get swept by the Pelicans or something dumb like that. And then they got past the second round, right? And they got to the Western Conference Finals. That's big for Damian Lillard, right? And when we're looking at kind of that whole, what is it good for? Just because you got to the Western Conference Finals, people want to come play for Portland because you have an elite point guard on that team. He is as good, if not less selfish, than Kyrie, and easier to play with than Kyrie. There are players that would probably line up the player next to him. So if you're saying you can get, if I'm the GM, if you can get a guarantee, hey, I might think about you guys as some big free agent. Well, now CJ McCollum needs to go to open up that slot, realistically. So the desperation and weird moves, I think like CJ McCollum could be a long shot target.
We have to give up Wiggins, though. Now if they take on Wiggins' contract, they have no longer room for a max slot in Portland.
Yeah, I don't know how it had to be a 3-team trade. That's how I'd look at it. It had to be another team like getting in on it to take on contracts for a rebuilding team. I don't know how they'd do it.
But just going off of that, I think it says a lot about the front office, like Gerson is putting together, like I just previously mentioned, where if we just turned you down, think of this, so if you, Brandon, were interviewing for a spot, if I'm Gerson, you come to me for an interview for the head coaching spot, and I turn you down. And now I call you back 2 weeks later and say, hey, do you want to come interview for our lead assistant job? Is that something you think about? Would you leave Portland and what they're building there as an assistant to not go up? You're going horizontally on the ladder. You're staying as an assistant, but you're coming to Minnesota, who won, what, 43 games last year?
Yeah, I think...
It says a lot about Gerson and the staff he's putting together and the culture that he's building here. With everyone he's bringing in.
He's got a plan.
And I'm starting to like that plan that he's got. Especially because he just hired Pablo Prigioni to be one of our assistant coaches, who was the player development coach last year for the Brooklyn Nets. In his first year as a coach, he just got done playing, played for multiple teams. He was with the Knicks. He was with all those kind of teams. He was the player development coach and worked with who? A free agent, D'Angelo Russell. Who, before we signed Pablo Prigioni, early this week, we just were linked to D'Lo as a possible destination. But a lot of things have to go down for us to get D'Lo. We'd have to get rid of either Teague and Saric to some team, or Wiggins. Now, if you're Brooklyn, they just traded Allen Crabb to clear up another max cap, or max slot. So they can go get Kyrie and they can cap D'Lo and bring in those two, or they can go Kyrie in another max slot. Do you think that, before we get into this, do you think that D'Lo and Kyrie can mesh together in Brooklyn?
No. I don't think D'Angelo... I know that Spencer Dinwiddie had the ball in his hands, and D'Angelo played off ball. And a lot of times this sat kind of in the low slot. It was kind of weird. But no, I don't, because D'Angelo Russell's not at his best when he's not on the ball, walking it up. He can create his own shot. He's kind of... Actually, I'm not saying D'Angelo has even half the dribble handles as Kyrie, but D'Angelo Russell can create his own shot. He can shoot from a lot of different places on the court. And I don't think that those personalities are necessarily mesh, because first off, Spencer Dinwiddie was so close, and Spencer Dinwiddie doesn't have that same personality as Kyrie. So no, I don't think so.
So now going forward, we got Gianluca in our front office, who was in Brooklyn last year. We got Pablo Prigioni, who was the player development coach for D'Lo last year. And we got D'Lo's best friend in Cat in Minnesota. Those three. To lure D'Lo to come here. Cat's already been working Twitter, he's been working the phones, this and that, to get D'Lo to want to come here. I think this would be a good spot for D'Lo to come, but a lot of stuff would have to go down for him to play in a Wolves uni next year.
So unfortunate that we have like four just god awful contracts.
If you're Brooklyn, are you interested in Andrew Wiggins?
No. And absolutely not, because if you're Brooklyn, first off, he's a restricted free agent. So the T-Wolves are already above the cap, okay, by $7 million. And
well, they got to extend the qualifying offer to him first for him to be restricted. Which he doesn't have to accept or decline it. They can offer it, and now he is restricted.
Right.
So let's say, not even the Timberwolves, let's say the Sixers want to sign D'Angelo Russell. They can sign him to a 4-year max, and now Brooklyn has 72 hours from when he signs that contract. They've got 72 hours to match it, or he's going to Philly.
Yeah, I just don't see them not matching it. I think they're going to give him the contract, and then they're going to trade him, because they can. Because people need point guards.
So it'll be a sign and trade for him to go somewhere, which sign and trades.
It doesn't work.
When's the last sign and trade you signed in the NBA?
It won't work out in our favor, or in a lot of teams' favors. Because one.
Was Chris Paul a sign and trade to Houston? Was he a sign? Or is that just a straight up trade?
I don't know. I'm not sure about that.
I don't remember the last sign and trade there was in the NBA.
It's been a while. It's just uncommon. It doesn't really seem to work in the Timberwolves' favor, because. They're not going to take Wiggins back.
And if they get Kyrie, they're not going to want Teague.
Yeah, they're not going to want any of those guys. They're not going to get those. That's not going to work. It has to be a third team thing. Or, I don't know. It's just so unrealistic.
Let's give him Mr. $64 million himself.
It's so unrealistic for
me. Give him Gorgie. That'll work. Nobody's going to want Gorgie.
I don't know what we're going to do for that. But
it's good that Gerson is kind of treating this as like an NFL team right now, because he's given Ryan Saunders, his defensive coordinator in Vanderpool, and now he's given Pablo Prigioni the offensive responsibilities. So now Ryan can just coach from the sidelines and not worry about calling plays, not worry about running the defensive kind of stuff. So he literally has to do is coach this team, because he's given the other two guys, Vanderpool, the defensive responsibilities, and Pablo Prigioni the offensive responsibilities. So, I mean, that's going to go a long way, and I think what we're doing so far is looking really good, and what we're building is going to go a long ways for us, and I hope we find a way to bring D'Lo in, because he would look really good playing next to Cat, but I just don't see a way that we can realistically do it. But I did see on Twitter earlier, it might have been today or yesterday I saw this, that the Timberwolves are bringing in six guys, and one of them is Amir Coffey for a workout. It's going to be a six-person workout. But after they are done with those six guys, they're bringing in Coby White for an individual one-on-zero private workout. Now, does Coby White slide to 11? I don't think so. So with us bringing him in for a private workout, that's hinting that we kind of want to see what he has, and we want to trade up for him. To maybe Phoenix's sixth spot, what we mentioned last week.
Yeah.
Give Teague to Phoenix, and now after this private workout of where I'm impressed with Kobe, let's go get him.
I'm really worried that Kobe White, I've been looking at the mock drafts every day. Given they're not necessarily accurate, but the one thing that's consistent...
13 days away till draft day.
The one thing that's consistent, and I think it's rightfully so, good job by all the scouts, is that what is trending up the most? All the really good guards. Darius Garland is a lock for a top five. Kobe White is becoming almost a top five. It's becoming really close between 5, 6, and 7. If he went 5 in that, I don't know. But if you're right, if we can trade with Phoenix, and I think there's some fits there because, first, I'm not sure if they understand their direction. Second, I think they're desperate because they know they're close to losing Devin Booker.
And they've already said they want to trade the 6th pick for a proven guard.
Yep, yes.
And I would consider Teague a proven guard in this league. That's one of the... Okay, I shouldn't say that. I should say he's a proven guard that is on the market.
Yes.
That someone can go get.
I also wonder, sorry, this is about the Timberwolves. I wonder if Daryl Morey attacks that. I mean, how better to offload $35 million a year to open up a max slot to get maybe a Jimmy Butler? I'm just saying, like, Daryl Morey is a genius, and he's crazy, but he does a lot of cool things.
And he said everyone is available, so if they can send CP3 to Phoenix for the 6.
There you go. That would be fun to watch. You have on here...
I was just going to mention this. I've kind of been doing, or kind of wanted to start a NBA player, like a profile for draft guys.
Yeah.
And we're bringing in next week... a 6'9", 230-pound small forward who is 19 years old from France. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. Sekou Doumbouya. He's from France. Again, he's 6'9", 230, as a 19-year-old prospect.
Wow.
He has been kind of compared to...
Siakam?
A Tim Thomas / Siakam / I don't want to get there yet, but he's got the body of... kind of a Greek freak.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just going to kind of want to run through his NBA draft, not comparisons, but his like ratings. Athleticism, he's a 9 out of 10. Size, 9 out of 10. Defense, 8 out of 10. Quickness, 8 out of 10.
Wow.
NBA jump shot, 8 out of 10. NBA ready, 7 out of 10. Rebounding, 7 out of 10. Potential. This is what really gets me because this kid is 19 years old.
Is he 8?
9 out of 10.
Oh, wow.
An overall grade of a 92 out of 100.
Who was this by?
The NBA Draft.net.
Draft.net, okay, yeah.
So, wow. For a 19-year-old prospect.
That's ridiculous.
And for a kid that played in France last year in the LNB Pro League, per 36 minutes, he averaged 15 points a game. Shot 49% from the field, 35% from three, and 80% from the free throw line.
That's actually pretty good.
That's his per 36.
That's pretty.
1.4 assists and 1.4 steals. For a 19-year-old kid, that's like comparing Ricky Rubio kind of because he's been playing pro. Since he was a young teenager, like Rubio did.
I think that's perfect. So you said it was a private workout. I think it's really cool. Like, this is, if I'm scouting, this is how I look at it. Okay, we're going to talk. Like, now I know that you have all these, you just told me, rattled off a ton of things that scouts have added to draft.net. And, okay, he is clearly gifted from the physical standpoint. Now we want to know what? We want to know, is he able to adapt to what we are teaching here? Is he able to understand the playbook and understand the scheme, the fits, and all these small little things? And then is he really good at like being like talking and wanting to learn and absorb those things? I think like that's why Siakam. I was listening to Siakam after their last win, with like Barkley and all those guys. Like he's really, really intelligent. You can tell that off the bat. So I think like just making sure, and it's not a knock against Gorgui Dieng. I'm sure he's a really intelligent dude, but I think there is a. Not as eagerness to keep getting better because there was a little ceiling on Gorgui Dieng, and there's a little room to improve. And it just seemed like, I mean, maybe it was because the roster and guys came, but I mean, we want a guy that's really intelligent. I don't know if you've ever listened to him talk or anything, but I know when I was looking at Josh Okogie last year, I was listening to people have, like, their... After their... The what do you call it? The draft combine games, you know, for 20 minutes, for a half, they had the interviews, and Josh Okogie came on, and Chauncey Billups, like, interviewed him live on ESPN, and he demolished, like, all these, like... basketball questions that he didn't know. I don't think he was even scripted, to be honest. He just, I mean, I think that's why Josh Okogie has so much upside. This is it Dumboya?
Yep. So he started, I'm just kind of reading up on him more. He started playing basketball at 12 years old, was playing pro by 17 in France.
Jesus.
And who's someone else that came from France that played for the Spurs? Tony Parker.
Parker.
And there's been a lot of other guys that came from France. So France is dishing out some good prospects.
Siakam's actually half French.
And they're also saying, I'm just doing a little research. Last year he played the one at times for his team. At 6'9", 230 pounds. So he is NBA ready to play the 1-4.
Oh, sounds good to me. Sounds already better than Wiggins.
So going back to...
Does it say that he has a good motor? Does it say anything like that?
But going back to trading... for the sixth pick, if we get Coby White and we can possibly get Dumboya at 11, things are trending upward. And that's where the questioning the norm is going to happen. We're going to draft somebody, I think, at 11 that if we can get two picks, if we get that six or what, if we want to get 6 through 9, whatever it's going to be, I won't say he's a project. We can take someone that's not like a Brandon Clark, who we know what he's going to be in the NBA. He's going to come in to be a defensive menace. He's going to block shots. He's going to get rebounds. He's going to do all these kind of things.
It's hard to project those European talents.
We can take somebody that has a lot of upside, but is not yet 100% proven to what we know what he can do in the NBA. So that's kind of my mock, not a mock, but my draft profile for this week. And now there was a trade.
Hold on. One thing before we go to the Wild. It's a great idea, though. Let's remember, Brent, next week we are going to go hard on some... We're going to have prepared some NBA draft profiles, because the draft, I believe, is coming up the 20th.
June 20th.
So, you're right. Next week we're going to have... We should aim for, like, 10 guys that we like total between the two of us. Profiles and kind of in-depth for about half an hour or 40 minutes.
I like that.
Yeah.
We'll go hard on the
whole podcast we could just do dedicated to the NBA.
So now, we talked, 2 weeks ago about... all these trades that Zucker has been involved in.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet again this morning, what happens? Another trade with Zucker. And who are we getting back, Brando?
Hopefully Brock Besser. Oh, and St. Cloud?
St. Cloud guy.
St. Cloud guy. No.
Played at St. Cloud State.
Went to UND.
UND, yeah.
UND. Oh, wait. No, but I thought you went to both. But I don't know. Either way, Brock Besser, absolute monster. I think he was 21 years old last year, 22, and he dropped 50 to 60 points. He's had 2 years now of 60 points-ish. He's going to be an expensive player at some point, but and there's a lot more upside than, I think, than you have with Zucker. Offensively, when you get Besser, can you imagine a line with Besser and Greenway and, like,
Donato? He's from Burnsville, went to UND.
From Burnsville, really?
From Burnsville, wow. Went to UND.
I would not. That's pretty cool. I wonder, like, does Brock Besser? Does he want to come here a lot? Do you think he's kind of like his agent's like kind of pushing for it? Like, come on, man.
He scored 56 points last year in 69 games played.
That's pretty good. So I'm gonna guess he got like, does it say like time on ice?
And that was his career high.
Was he 17, 16 minutes on ice? Say anything like that?
Do not see that, but he had 22 penalty minutes.
I wonder if... That's interesting. Brock Besser, I mean... So, this is what happened. Vancouver denied the trade. We offered them it. But they also contacted us about Jason Zucker. They put a different kind of... What do you call those on the trade machine? And they deny it, and they kind of send you something.
A counteroffer?
Counteroffer. They sent us a counteroffer reportedly of Michael Russo that has not been released to the public. No one, maybe only Russo knows, maybe he doesn't. We don't know what happened there. We didn't like it. We're still apparently in trade talks with Vancouver. There has not been said yet. Russo made it clear. they have not said that Besser's off the table. I think that's so huge. If we can go from almost trading Zucker for an aging Bill Kessel on a bad contract to a 22-year-old guy from Minnesota who's actually really good, like probably the best Minnesota player in my opinion since Parisi, and then who's the other guy from Minnesota with the Winnipeg Jets? Wheeler. I can't remember his name, but probably one of the best Minnesota players in the last 20 years would be Brock Besser, in my opinion, going forward. So that would be huge. Again, if I'm Zucker, I'm kind of like worried about... Well, now I think if I'm Zucker, I think I know I'm going to be traded. It's pretty imminent, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, his time with the Wild is done, I think.
It's unfortunate.
His boat ran out. His clock is done.
Fenton is special. I don't trust Fenton, but we already talked about that. Last thing about the Wild, we should probably discuss about what in the world are we doing with Eric Staal and Mikko Koivu, because we now have a log jam at center next year because Luke Cunningham's all of a sudden a center and Donato's sometimes a center. I don't know what we're going to do, Brent, and Joel Eriksson X is center and Victor Hess is a center. No idea what we're going to do next year. We have to play people out of position and on their bad hand again. It's going to be a disaster. I literally don't think, this is to wrap it up, and you can have some comments. I just think, like, even if you don't follow hockey, you should, like, and people, like, look at some of these trades, it is mind-boggling to see what the heck. Like, the Timberwolves, it seems like in the last 2 months, like, the Timberwolves GM in front office has gone drastically up, even though nothing's happened, really, besides a ton of hiring of staff, but good staff. And the Wild have done the exact opposite. Like, I think the Wild are going to be in for about 2 years of being atrocious. But we'll see. So before we end up this podcast, I want to go back to the Twins and talk about the minor league report, because these are the guys that are going to be traded in the next month, realistically, our best options. So let's do a little minor league report, okay? I want to give you some generic stats of what they've been doing. Lewin Diaz. Thank the Lord, if you're a Twins fan, for Lewin Diaz. He's hit 11 home runs, I believe, nearing .300 average, high on base percentage. And I think he's second in extra base hits in Double-A currently. Single-A and Double-A in all the leagues combined. So that's pretty impressive. Lewin Diaz isn't supposed to be a top 10 prospect. He is really young. He's only 21 years old, and Lewin Diaz is becoming a guy that you could package up in a trade. He's becoming kind of a really good, nice prospect. Like a guy that has, if you had to ask me right now, Nick Gordon's value as a prospect and Lewin Diaz is higher right now, and there's no doubt about it. He is ripping the ball for how young he is. Diaz is showing he could be a 30 to 40 guy, which is everything in the MLB if you have a decent average. Another thing let's talk about is Royce Lewis's struggles, Brent. Are you concerned about him hitting .220 and a .280 on base?
I won't say I'm concerned to the point where, oh my goodness, let's trade him. He's historically, like we've talked about before, gotten off to bad starts like Buxton has. And now Buxton has figured it out where he is one of our better hitters. He's one of the best, if not the best, center fielders in the game, defensively. And I think that Lewis can overcome this. I mean, he's young still. He's got 2 years to figure it out, I think, before he comes to the bigs. Maybe a year and a half. I think maybe next year, September call-ups, get his taste. And so he's got time to figure out a curveball. He's got time to figure out all these things, which he's struggling with. He's a good fastball hitter, like we've talked about. So he's got time to figure out off-speed pitches, which in the minors, if we can just get that figured out and now we can come up here, because he's always had a good glove. He's always had quick hands. He's always had all these things to where now, like a Buxton, where if we can figure out the plate, we're going to be set, because he's going to be defensively fine. If he were to come up to the bigs right now defensively, he'd be fine.
Yeah.
And if we can figure out his bat and just get rid of the slow starts for the first 80 games and just turn it around to where we're 15 games in, now let's roll. Because everybody's going to have a slow first 10 games.
Yeah.
Typically. We're not all going to have the Polanco or the Rosie approach to where we get off and hit 11 home runs right away. So I'm not concerned to where let's trade him. I'm concerned to where, why does it take you 80 games to get going?
Yeah. Yep. Now let's go. I'm going to talk about really quick Alex Kirilloff. He just came back from an injury about a couple weeks ago. He started getting really hot and hit his first couple home runs games in a row, consecutive games. And then he gets back on the IL again recently with another potential wrist injury, which Alex Kirilloff has been on and off the IL, which is very disappointing to see. I was thinking that Kirilloff would guaranteed be at AAA at the end of the year, and Royce Lewis would be at least knocking at the door of AAA. Does not look like that. Royce Lewis got demoted already from AA to A, and Kirilloff's on the IL again. So, you're right. I don't think we trade either of them. I don't think we should. I don't think there should be a concern. Nick Gordon is now slumping again. His value's deteriorating by the day, it seems like. Jordan Balavich has been great for us this year. Hopefully continues that. He's now becoming about our third best prospect for pitching. And he's ranked 7th in our top 10. That's a big deal. Wander Javier, of course, is great. He's probably going to be a starting shortstop guarantee in the MLB. And Severino's coming into his own form. Let me talk really fast because we have a couple more minutes. Two more things. Jake Cave, Luis Arias. Jake Cave, anyone pay attention? Nope. I guess not. This guy's been literally destroying the ball in AAA.
And I feel bad for Jake Cave because he's been up in the bigs for the past 3 years, and now he had a team like this, and he can't see time in the bigs.
We can trade him, and he has a ton of value. His rookie year at 25 years old for the Twins last year, coming from New York, he hits 270, 13 homers, and 50 RBIs in 10 stolen bases. That was the third best rookie year from a Twins outfielder in Twins history. That's a big deal. Now, can we get Jake Cave to be maybe traded to, for a reliever, Jake Cave and a Nick Gordon? I honestly believe so. You could trade Jake Cave and Nick Gordon for Will Smith. Boom. You have your guy. I mean, that's a fair trade. We're not losing anything because we're never going to use Jake Cave, and Nick Gordon's going nowhere because we don't need Nick Gordon. Luis Arias is my issue. He should be sent down right now. That's unfortunate. I really hope we don't trade Luis Arias. He has a ton of value, like Brent was talking about last week. He dominated when he short stint with the Twins. He's dominating since he's gone back to AAA once again. He's hitting like .450 the last 5 games. And we're going to wrap this podcast up with a final thought thing, Brent. Okay? And you're going to have to give me about 3 more minutes of your time. But final thoughts, it's called a little short segment called Outlook of the Playoffs. So I'll do a little outline for you and you respond. So the Yankees are very clear to me that they're going to win the AL East. And if not, they're guaranteed to get a playoff spot as a wild card. The second team that's guaranteed playoff spot is the Astros, who's leading the AL West by multiple games again. And then your third guaranteed team is your Minnesota Twins. There's 3 dominant horses in the AL. This is how it works. Your 2 wild cards play in a 1-game playoff spot, and your 3 other teams, the top seed, play as the wild card winner, and the 2 and 3 play each other. So, as a Twins fan, Brent, where the hell do you want the seedings to land?
I want us to get the 1 seed, and I will hope the Yankees win the East so that we don't play them at Yankee Stadium in a 7-game playoff. We need the 1 seed because we cannot go to Yankee Stadium for 4 games.
If the Twins don't get the number 1 seed, which I think we won't, what do you want then? If we're not the number 1 seed,
so you're in that situation, I think the Astros will get the 1?
You decide. I don't know. It's fun to watch every night. Who do you think's the best team? I think the Yankees, they're going to have to get evened out by the Red Sox at some point.
If the Astros get to one, we need to get to two and do everything we can to get to two.
Yeah.
Because, again, we cannot go to Yankee Stadium because what has happened this year at Yankee Stadium? We lost 2-3.
Yeah.
What happened in the one-game playoff at Yankee Stadium?
Took
an L.
We were up 2-0 and then we lost the game.
What happened in history at Yankee Stadium for us? Cannot win at Yankee Stadium.
Twins are 14-65 for anyone that cares in playoff history against the Yankees. That's awful.
So we need to get to one, or we need to get to two to be comfortable, I think, going forward.
Yes, and if you don't get the two, you better pray, if you're a Twins fan, that the Yankees get the number one seed, because you don't want to be going to New York for game one and two.
And I don't even want to go to Houston for four games.
I don't want to go anywhere. I don't want to even play Boston. I hope we play the Rays, or I hope we play some like wild card team that's not Houston, Yankees, or Boston. It's going to be a tough way out. We're going to have to beat the best to get to where we
want. And that's what the playoffs is. Yeah. You got to beat the best to be the best. Yeah. And we've proven it this year. We've beaten really good teams. But we beat the Astros 2 out of 3 at our place. We lost to them 2 out of 3 at Houston. We have not played New York at our place yet, but we lost to them 2 out of 3 at Yankee Stadium. So, I mean, it just proves that if we can get a home advantage series where we're playing 4 out of the 7 games at our park, we're going to be really tough to beat if we can get the back end of our rotation figured out, the back end of our bullpen figured out. So if we can get 4 games in Minnesota, I think we're going to be sitting all... we're not sitting great, yeah, but we'll be sitting all right in the playoffs. So with that being said, we're 57 minutes now into our pod. I will end it there for this week. We'll be back next week with our Minnesota Timberwolves draft special.
We'll talk about guys like Coby White, Darius Garland. Is he real? We'll talk about...
Nazir Little, Rui Hachimura.
We'll be talking about... Well, I don't know if we will talk about Brandon Clarke. I'm not too interested. What about... Do we even need to talk about Ja Morant? We're not going to get him.
We're not going to get Ja. We're not going to get Zion. So
we're not going to talk about those guys.
We'll target guys we can maybe get if we're to move up, and if we're to sit or even move back in the draft, if we can target some guys there too.
Like Dumboya.
So thanks for listening to this week's MSI Pod. That was episode 6 of season 1. Brenda, what do you got for us this week to carry us out?
It's like G-Cinco.